You're listening to the Addicted to Fitness podcast, brought to you by Elemental Training Tampa. This episode comes from the earlier version of the podcast, known as the ETT Rap Show. Enjoy!
What's going on, guys? Thanks for stopping by and checking out this week's Addicted to Fitness podcast. Like Shannon mentioned in the intro, this week is a throwback episode to when the podcast was known as the ETT Rap Show. There's a few reasons why we're doing a throwback show this week, but mainly because the lovely Shannon Birch, you heard earlier, is still fighting a cold. So her voice is yet to be returned to its sultry tones. So we figured we'd throw you a throwback episode, actually her debut on the podcast. There's some dated references in there, but there's still a lot of great health and fitness information in there. So hope you guys enjoy it. And once again, I want to thank you guys for all the comments you've given us so far. Please keep them coming. Also give us a rating or review on iTunes or whatever podcast app you choose to listen. And also share it with a friend. We really appreciate you guys helping us distribute this health and fitness information to everyone that wants to hear it. All right, guys, enough of that. Let's get to the episode. Welcome back to the ETT Rap Show. I'm your host, Nick Birch, and normally sitting next to me or on the other side of the Skype call is Tyler Knox, but he was a little bit under the weather this week, so sitting in for him is my lovely fiance, soon-to-be wife, Shannon Palmer. Hello, Shannon.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, thank you so much. I hope Tyler doesn't take any offense, but I think I upgraded definitely on the looks and the co-host looks and
you. Possibly
the brains too. So,
well, sorry, I don't Tyler. Know about that.
Sorry, Tyler, but you know.
I'm kind of glad you introduced me though, because I was thinking I was going to have to sit here and talk in a really deep voice the whole time.
Now, nobody can mistake Tyler's voice for your voice.
I know.
It can be tough. So, we had a great week in ETT training this week, but since Shannon is my co-host this week, I'm going to ask her first kind of what she got into as far as fitness goes this week. What did you get into? What kind of workouts did you get to?
Well, I don't know about anybody else, but the time change, losing an hour, really screwed with my workouts because I do all my workouts in the morning. And I get up early, and I'll either go to spinning a couple times a week, and to do that, I have to get up and be on the road by about 4:45. So I wasn't able to do that this week, so instead I ended up just doing some HIIT workouts at home, a lot of kettlebell workouts. I actually have some seriously impressive calluses on my hand. I apologize for my not ladylike hands this week.
Like the CrossFit days.
I know, that's just like my CrossFit days, when my hands were frightening. I'm trying to focus every single workout that I do, get a really good concentrated arm, because I have muscly arms that just tend to look kind of flabby if I don't do some work on them.
Right.
So I'm trying to get them toned up.
Yeah, I would say you definitely have kind of that broad shoulder back. You know,
I look like a linebacker from
very
behind.
Very similar to a lot of female CrossFitters.
So, yeah.
Definitely got that from your dad, I think. So he was nice enough to give that to you.
I'm pretty sure that was my nickname as a little kid. Like, oh, it's my little linebacker. Yeah.
That's nice.
It's really good.
What kettlebell arm exercises do you do?
So I did the one arm press up.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually upped from the smallest kettlebell to the second,
right,
which is
15 pounds. I
15 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of wimpy before, and I was doing the 10. So I did the 15s, and then I also went up to, I think, what's the teal one? 25 pounds or something? Yeah. So I did those. I did the behind,
okay,
the head, like drops or whatever you call them.
Like your triceps?
Yes.
Okay.
And that worked really well, and I basically just pushed them to exhaustion so that I couldn't lift my arms up the next day. And then kettlebell swings, I think, are always just a full body.
Yeah, that's
anyways.
A good total body one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Like I said, I know you already said that you normally do spinning. That was something interesting I wanted to ask you. You already told them you wake up at around 5:15 and go right out the door. So you don't eat anything before you spin?
I don't eat anything. I will usually drink like one glass of water just to rehydrate, and that's it. And I won't eat anything probably until about like 9 o'clock in the morning.
Wow. How long is spinning? About 60 minutes?
The class is 45, but I'm usually in there from 35 to 40 minutes. I can't actually stay the whole class or else I'm late for work.
Do you ever get hungry while you're on the bike in there or no?
No.
Nope. I think that's a good sign. What I learn more and more, I learn about nutrition and trying to get off being more carb dependent, is that, because like I was like this probably about less than 6 months ago, is that I could get up, right when I got up, I could eat immediately. I was hungry.
Yeah.
But like I said, if you put on top of it, putting cardio, like you were doing, fasted cardio, I mean, I would probably eat several breakfasts. Breakfast size. I don't know if there's a plural for breakfasts. Like I said, that's a kind of a, leads me to believe from what I know that you're probably, you know, you're not as carb dependent because you're mobilizing that fat while you're fasted on the bike too, which is a good sign. So I know we've been trying to, you know, stay away from too much sugar and all that stuff and bread and pasta. So
of course I ate 2 pies today.
Yeah.
So that just blew that out the window. Yeah, well, I mean, once I do start eating in the morning, I'm hungry, like, most of the day. And I'm semi-hypoglycemic. I'm, like, borderline hypoglycemic. Mm-hmm. So if I don't eat every so often, my blood sugar just is completely depleted, and I have no energy, like, literally nothing to go on. So I do get that more often if I don't continuously kind of snack or have little meals throughout the day, but I'm pretty much good until I have that first bite in the morning.
And plus, we've been, like I said, we've both been pretty good on making each other's lunches. It used to be just
you
me.
You much better than me.
Yeah. Well, it used to be just me. I used to make my lunch. But then I was like, well, why can't I just make her lunch too? Because we usually eat the same thing. So that was, like I said, you got your hard-boiled eggs, you got your yogurt with nuts and fruit and your salad and your different sorts of protein in there too. And occasionally I'll see you bring a, you know, protein smoothie, fruit and veggie smoothie. So that's
very little carbs, though.
Yeah. And you also, another big achievement for you that I noticed is your coffee.
Yeah.
Because I know you like coffee, but you used to be kind of a Starbucks,
I was like a Starbucks latte addict. I was going on like one a day, which is a really expensive habit for anybody that knows how much a Starbucks latte is, especially when you start to like substitute your milks or you get, you know, any differences from just like a plain vanilla latte, they get really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now I am just coffee with half and half, even not even any sugar anymore.
That's awesome.
Huge accomplishment compared to where I was.
Yeah, because I think we probably touched on this a little bit a couple podcasts ago, but I mean, the amount of sugar in those lattes, especially the flavored lattes at Starbucks.
Yeah.
Because I'll get a latte from Starbucks, but it's just, you know, milk and coffee or espresso.
Yeah.
But like I said, once you get into the flavored lattes, they're pumping basically syrup, whatever flavored syrup you want into there.
Yeah, and it's anywhere, I mean, you get a grande, it's anywhere from 3 to 4 pumps.
Yeah.
And like I started asking for 2 pumps, and then I started asking for 1 pump to kind of wean myself off. And now I have 1 pump, and I'm like, oh my gosh, oh my God, it's so sweet. And I can't even handle it anymore. So, I mean, the average American, I think, probably consumes way more sugar, not even just in their coffee, than they'd actually believe if they saw it laid out. And it's stuff like that. I mean, if you can avoid it, it's so much better. And I used to have a cough in the morning, especially when I did spinning. I don't have it anymore because I don't follow it up with like a sweet drink. So
yeah, like I said, I go to the occasional times I go to Starbucks for a latte, or just if I want a black coffee, and I see people order the flavored lattes and then put sugar on it. On top of that, it astonishes me.
Yeah.
But like I said, That was glad you got all those workouts in, because I know that's something very important for you to kind of stay sane, especially not, and me too. I need to work out to stay sane. I think a lot of us do.
Literally.
But we, for ETT training this week, to transition into that, we had some new clients actually start this week.
Yes, which we had a big little celebrational moment this week. Was it Wednesday night, right?
Thursday.
It was a big moment.
Yeah, and it was great because they're actually super local. You know, obviously my clients are either Tampa or St. Pete, but these people are actually in my neighborhood in the Seminole Heights area.
Woo-hoo.
So they're you know, just a short drive away, which is awesome. And which works out, because I know I kind of mentioned before that I'm kind of at capacity for clients.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily for them, since they're so close, I can fit them in. And now I'm definitely at capacity.
Yeah, clients. Which is also such a super accomplishment. And I am so proud of you, because this time last year, you were just starting to really kind of get on the personal training one-on-one sessions. And here you are a year later. And you're basically just filled to the max with your job and your free time. So that's huge.
Yes. They
two jobs.
I was looking back at I've been doing some tax stuff for the business and personal stuff. And my first client was end of April of last year was the first client. So, you know, we're coming up on almost a full year, and I already have a full client base. You know, like I said, only...
Part-time client base.
Yes, exactly. Like I say, full-time effort for a part-time, you know, hours-wise.
Yes.
You know, because it's still working the other 9-to-5 job.
I'm so exciting.
Yes, thank you. You've been here since the inception and the whole early childhood development of it, you know. So we're still learning and still, you know, trying to gain knowledge in both business and training, personally, my training. And which is kind of another thing we could talk about, which I did today. I went to a kickboxing seminar.
I want to hear about this, because you've been super excited about this for 2 months.
At least, because I saw it advertised. It was a local Gracie Tampa school. There's different satellite schools under the Gracie Tampa name. I trained jiu-jitsu at Gracie Tampa South. Today I went to Gracie Pack MMA. They were hosting Bang Muay Thai, which is a striking system made popular, or basically created, by Dwayne Ludwig, who is former UFC, former K-1 world champion, UFC, you know, competitor and fighter, and he has been 2-time MMA Coach of the Year.
Wow.
He was, you know, obviously probably one of his most prolific fighters that he's coached is TJ Dillashaw, who was a former 135 UFC champion.
Damn.
Who just lost his belt a few months ago and is probably going to be fighting again in another rematch to try to get that belt back.
So this is basically a specialized or a concentration within the Muay Thai. Because
yes.
You trained Muay Thai when you were fighting.
Yes.
And this was more specialized to his technique.
Yeah, the way he explained it towards the end, because he went into a description of his specific system. You know, and combines his traditional Muay Thai into when you learn from the Dutch, which were, you know, the Dutch, a lot of people don't know, were really big into Muay Thai kickboxing.
I had no idea.
Yeah, they have a lot of, some of the most...
Dutch, and I do not think of Muay Thai.
Some of the most epic, you know, kickboxers, and especially Muay Thai kickboxers, were from Holland.
Huh.
Yeah, so
did
Bosk...
Did they wear wooden shoes?
I don't know.
Sorry, that would hurt so bad.
But some guys, I mean, Bas Rutten is a name a lot of people have heard of, especially in MMA, and he was really kind of Dwayne's, kind of one of his main instructors, but he learned from a lot of other guys Rob Kamen and Ramon Deckers. So he takes that system, and then he also incorporates his own interpretation of it to apply it that works the best for MMA.
So for the layman people like me, because mm-hmm. I know only a little bit of Muay Thai, how would you describe to a person like me Like, what's different about it?
And the one thing that I noticed, because this was my first exposure, like, actually training in the system today. I've seen it. I've, you know, watched videos and things like that. But today was my first exposure to it. A lot of different foot movement. Like, normally, you're going in and out of your traditional stance, because normally I'm a conventional or orthodox, so I have my right foot back. Even if you have a right foot back, he is constantly switching stance and moving on angles to create new punches or new strikes from different angles. So he does a lot of foot movement, a lot of the switching of the stance, a lot of moving sideways, right and left, and then a lot of really, I mean, the way I love and I try to tell all my clients the same thing is make sure, you know, like your feet are set underneath you when you make your punch. But like with this guy, he is, I mean, uber detailed. I mean, he just, everything you're doing, he's commenting on, and he's saying, you just got to be one more, like, little inch over here or one inch over there. Mm-hmm. It's like, you just got to move side to side or front and back. So he has a great system that works really good for MMA, because in MMA, obviously, and traditional Muay Thai like I did, or not traditional Muay Thai, but the Muay Thai I did and competed in, I didn't have to worry about getting taken down.
Right.
So, like, in MMA, wrestling, takedowns is a huge part of it.
Yeah.
So the striking, where everyone starts on their feet, he developed a system that really is good for moving on angles and avoid getting taken down, but still landing strikes.
Well, it sounds a lot more confusing, too, from someone who wouldn't have that training, because there's a lot more, basically sounds like he's got people moving all over the place.
Yeah.
So a traditional fighter would be somewhat challenged by this technique.
Yeah, but like I said, he explains it and teaches it in such a way. And he's a big one. It was a, you know, gosh, what was it? I think it's, obviously he says you got to slow everything down. Mm-hmm. You can't run through anything. You're never going to learn it properly if you
right.
run through it or go through. He said you start slow to get better, to progress. Mm-hmm. And that's what he was big on. He's like, always, you know, just if you can't get the combination, that means you're going too fast and you got to slow down.
Yeah.
So he's big on, you know, details, techniques, and just getting it right and just drilling it. And that's what I'm finding out with everything, like this in jiu-jitsu and this, drilling is really where it's at. You know, it's fun to roll in jiu-jitsu, roll basically live kind of grappling on the ground, and it's fun to spar, but drilling is how you really get those techniques down, and you can apply it to either the rolling or the sparring.
Yeah.
So 3+ hours drilling.
Wow.
Must
be exhausted.
Yeah, and like I said, you mentioned before, I saw this advertised in January, and I signed up right away, and it got postponed, because it was supposed to be in February,
right.
And it got postponed to March, and I've been looking forward to this for months, so I was super happy to go, and enjoyed all almost three and a half hours of it. So. And I actually trained with an old training partner, Jay Shupak. He trained at Mirrors Academy with me.
Oh, cool.
Over in St. Petersburg, Florida, when I was training there.
Yep.
He's the children's instructor over there.
Oh, cool.
He teaches the kids program, and he came and trained with me today. Or not trained with me, but came to the seminar also, and we actually hooked up.
Very
and we
cool.
were our training partners throughout the 3.5 hours. So that was awesome, and obviously got to take pictures with Dwayne Ludwig, and which was a big kind of honor of mine. Well, you know, I don't normally, like, I'm not giddy or kind of like...
You don't fangirl.
Yeah, exactly. I don't
fangirl over too many people.
Exactly. But, like, him, he's very special. So I was happy to even, you know, shake his hand and talk to him and take all of his instructions. So
awesome.
I totally blank. He came over and he basically was my partner for one drill. And he was like, do this move. And I'm just standing there. I'm like frozen. Like I couldn't even
like
do it.
Like a deer in
the
headlights.
Yeah. I was like, I couldn't even do it. And like I said, he was like, come on. And I was like, okay. So like I said, it was awesome though. There's plenty of pictures up on ET Tampa, both Twitter and Instagram. And I put a Facebook post together also.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad you had fun. It sounds awesome.
It was great. And another cool thing that happened this week, besides that, I got there was a guy in Tampa who started, I don't know if it started on Instagram or Facebook or either one, he started kind of a page to kind of document, you know, kind of astonishing weight loss transformations.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Kind of like greatest Biggest Loser, but yes. In real life.
So basically the Instagram page itself is like the before and after picture and then a little description for the person. And it's the handle on Instagram is WL Stories. So, you know, weight loss stories, WL Stories. Yep. And he put this together and got in contact with me. I guess he, you know, found me through Instagram. I tag everything with Tampa and Tampa Bay. And he was asking, you know, what my page is about. And I saw his and I was like, you know, I kind of have a weight loss story. And
you do.
And I kind of alluded to it in one of the, I think it was the very first ETT rap show. And but for more specifics, you know, I started training, you know, kickboxing really just to get in shape to lose weight. Mm-hmm. And within a year, a little over a year, I lost about 50 pounds. And then was competing in my first match.
That's crazy.
So I gave it, you know, I kind of relayed, you know, forward that story to him, and he featured it on his page, you know.
He posted?
Yeah, he posted it on the page. So that was pretty cool to see that. And I know he's got a Facebook page. It's also WL Stories, and then also on Instagram. So it was kind of cool to see that. And it's
good inspiration.
Yeah, it was good to, I think I put it on my personal Facebook because I always love my before picture. So if you guys haven't seen it yet, go to Instagram or the Elemental Training Tampa Facebook page. My before picture is pretty epic. Not just because I'm nice and look like I got stung by several bees. You know, my face is very swollen.
You weren't swollen. You were just rounder.
Yeah, I was very round. So, but that's another funny part of that picture I like the most. So, but yeah, so that was a really cool thing. I'm glad he reached out to me, and it's good to have a contact like that. So,
yeah.
It was very cool. Another thing that I want to talk about today and get your opinion about is I was listening to a podcast this week, which I'm apt to do, and they they talked about an article in the Telegraph, which I guess is a UK newspaper.
Yes.
And they were just talking about this article, and apparently the article had basically how fatter or obese people are, you know, there's certain things about obese people that makes them more healthier than non-obese people.
Saying there's actually, like, health benefits to obesity.
Yeah, there's health benefits to obesity. I kind of looked at this article a little bit, and obviously the headline, all the headline is doing is trying to grab people to read it, to look at it, right? So obviously the article goes into a little bit more detail, and luckily they list some, I would have to look at the research a little bit more carefully. They left some research that sounds, you know, somewhat credible, but obviously that's hard to say without really diving into it. Mm-hmm. But there was five different things they said that more obesity or more overweight people are healthier than non-overweight people. And what were the five that they had listed?
Well, I just pulled it up on my iPad here, and it looks like they said that being overweight carries a reduced risk of rheumatoid arthritis, which anybody who has any kind of, like, tendonitis or anything is probably terrified of, so that sounds like a great benefit. Then the second was that it means you're less likely to develop dementia.
Yeah.
And then the third is you have a stronger immune system. And then fourth is being overweight is linked to increased longevity and recovery time. And finally, number five, so it's five, is that you're better in the bedroom. So some interesting, I immediately wonder as to some of these are sort of like later in life type onsets that make me somewhat question, because anybody that's, you know, maybe obese in health standards, granted there's a lot of people that can be obese by like the BMI index, which it's ludicrous, and they're not actually unhealthy. I could see where there's some gray area there, but some of these seem a little bit.
Yeah, I think that second one, I looked under that, and it was talking about, you know, dementia.
Yeah.
You know, less likely to develop dementia. And of course, at the last paragraph of that section, it says, I think if you're morbidly overweight or obese, you're less likely to get to the age where you even develop dementia.
Oh, so it's basically you're not even going to get that far. Yeah. So your odds are immediately better. You're not going to get dementia.
I know. Yeah. I don't know if they factor that in. The one I want to look into a little bit more is the stronger immune system.
Oh, see, the one I thought was interesting was better in the bedroom.
Yeah, that, well, like I said, I mean,
like, really?
I don't want to get into a physical thing. I was like,
are you more likely to
spend time in the bedroom if you're obese?
Yeah, I don't know.
So I've just seen, I don't want to get into the mechanics of that or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So this was actually, this article was posted last year, September of last year. And then I looked for an article maybe to rebuttal that. And in the Telegraph, same newspaper, probably about 2 months later, they posted an article that says, "Fat but fit counts for nothing, scientists say. Obesity is what drives early death."
Well, and I just looked at this because I'm very curious about this now. So the better in bed thing is due to a female hormone called estradiol, which can be found, once again, in that miracle abdominal spare tire of many men. So it's a female hormone that is more common in like that more obese area for men, since you tend to keep your weight around your
belly,
waist,
love handles,
and it's known to inhibit the male orgasm. So I guess if you have more weight there, then you have less of this hormone or something. Or you have more staying power because you have more of this hormone.
Yeah, but then how? I mean, I'm sure.
So it means it's going to take you, the person that has this hormone, longer to get there, which I guess is why you'd be better in the bedroom. So
obviously, okay. Obviously not a reason to be overweight.
Sorry, I just thought that was a fact that needed to be investigated.
Yeah, that you're producing more female-like hormones is that the best way to be, you know, better in the bedroom?
Interesting.
I don't know. So like I said, another article from same newspaper a few months later, and they cited a study of 1.3 million men and found that obese people with high levels of aerobic fitness were 30% more likely to die prematurely. So the fat but fit.
Right.
Like I said, if you, you know, maybe you have aerobic fitness, but you're still overweight, you're mm-hmm. still more likely to die of, you know, at a younger age. Like they say, they compared it to those that were slim despite taking little exercise. Huh. So obviously, according to this study.
According to them, size matters.
Yes. Man, you have a one-track mind today.
Boom, boom.
Yeah, I know. But according to them, even, you know, it's the weight that's the issue, not necessarily the fitness.
Yeah.
You know, it's really the weights that's going to, you know, I don't want to be morbid, but send you to an early grave, opposed to the actual how fit you are.
Yeah, and the thing, I work in PR, so frequently I'm the person behind these where, like, I'll get a study for a client, and we'll manipulate the data to focus on only those facts that tell a specific story. So we might actually have a research study that will highlight both sides and say, okay, well, these findings found that, you know, being overweight has this impact. These little bits of data and these results in the same study may say the complete opposite. And that's kind of the thing for, I think, all of these studies is you have to kind of read between the lines. And if you ever see one of these, you have to really look at the research and find the source, because all of these are spin doctors. You know, these have all been tweaked to be sensationalized. And same newspaper, same studies that you have here. We have side-by-side iPads with them up and mm-hmm. telling completely different stories.
Yeah.
Not that far apart in time either.
Yeah, and we've mentioned that so many times about how it's really, they can, like you said, they can put any type of spin on it they want.
Oh yeah, I do it all the time.
You know? So like I said, you really got to delve into the research, and there's standards of research you should learn about, like, you know, the difference between an epidemiological study and a clinical, you know, double-blind placebo clinical trial.
Yeah.
So there's different ranges of research, and you got to really kind of find out which ones really gives the most, that their answers are really, they have the utmost confidence in research. That's kind of the gold standard.
So based on like the more dedicated, more in-depth research that you've read, would you say that either or maybe even both of these have some validity, or would you say that one is a little bit more on par with some of that more quality research that you've read? Or,
well, the one I just looked at, that one, kind of the one I was talking about, that showed that, you know, the fit but fat is a myth. They did 1.3 million men over 30 years. They tracked it.
Yeah.
So, and they found out, I mean, obviously I haven't gone to the actual research methods, but their conclusion was that, you know, it's the weight which determines how, you know, if you live longer or not, not the fitness. So when I see something like that, at one point, that's a huge sample size over a long period of time. That really, I mean, obviously I got to see what kind of other, you know, techniques they learned, but still, that, just looking at that from the outside, that tells me that it's a good sample size, and the data is probably pretty reliable.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I think most basic health knowledge that we understand today is around the lines of, you know, that weight is a big critical factor to a lot of health aspects. Yes. So obviously there's always exceptions.
They could be true claims, but the reason why they're true is because something else is going on in your body that is not necessarily good. You know, either the production of female-like hormones in a male body, or you're not living to the point where you get dementia. So, I mean, it's just, it's hard. I don't want, the reason when I heard that article, when I heard them describe it on the podcast, I got really angry, because I feel like people are trying to make excuses for, you know, obviously there's reason people are overweight. And I think I thought about this week. The cards are really stacked against us.
Actually, speaking on the same subject, there was a study recently announced, and I'd have to look it up, and maybe it's something that I can send you. You can tweet out or something like that. But basically, one of the organizations, like leading health organizations, went back on former obesity studies in the United States, and they found out that it's like severely behind. That it's actually lacking by like up to a third of the people. Like, they didn't report a third of the obesity in the country, and that it's actually way higher than it's previously been reported.
Oh, gotcha.
So they said that they were looking at such a small, limited set of factors, and they weren't taking into consideration these other basic like data points, that they were not counting a lot of people.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that are obese, they said that I think it was like a third higher than what they previously had said our nation's obesity rate is what it actually is.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. I'm not trying to, you know, discourage people who might be overweight or anything like that, because I know the system is really stacked against us, as far as the food system in this country. You know, like I said, people are fine. Don't know what to eat. They don't know what kind of diet. Yeah. And there's so many things full of preservative, high fructose corn syrup that's out there, and they make it more appetizing because it's easy to make, it's fast to make. You can just put it in a lunch and go. And I know it's tough to eat healthy, or mm-hmm. even find how to eat healthy. I know the house. Is if you look at it kind of from the Vegas perspective, the house usually wins, and the house is kind of, you know, the American food system, the way it's structured right now, and you got to know how to play the game correctly in order to beat the house.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of people, most people, they never usually
they don't
beat
teach
the house.
It. Yeah. It's not something that we learned. We're grown up to fit like society's definition of this is what you should eat, and I mean like. Actually, and even in school systems, like where it starts with schools, what, in the last 5 years, they completely threw out the food pyramid that we grew up with, and they have an entirely different, like, this is what you should eat system, and it is different than what we learned.
They're making changes, and
the My Plate versus the food pyramid, and it's like, if that much changes, and there's that much lack of understanding, I mean, even our government doesn't even know what to recommend to people, so it puts a lot of pressure on people. They have to do it themselves.
Yeah, and I don't want to be, you know, tinfoil hat conspiracy theory guy, but the government, they have a lot of special interests that they have to kind of placate to.
Yeah, because so, they house most of the pharmaceutical and health companies.
Well, as far as, like, you know, just corn and soybean, I mean, that's a big lobby, and a lot, they want that, I mean, U.S. government and U.S., you know, the agriculture is based on those two crops now, so they want those crops to have a market, and, you know, that's kind of where the high fructose corn syrup and all the preservatives come from, you know, and they want that as their main import and export, or not import, but export inside and outside the country, so they want it to be a thriving industry.
Okay, take your tinfoil hat off.
Sorry.
There's
take your time.
There's just a lack. There's a lack of knowledge. Information, and there's a lack of freely distributed and kind of consistent information about nutrition and health, and it really is up to individuals, I think, to take ownership of that education, because I was lucky enough to have parents that very much were strong believers in a very specific nutritional and lifestyle habits that supported a healthy lifestyle. I still struggled with weight when I was a kid, though, because you fight the norm.
Yep.
So it has to come down to individuals taking the power onto themselves.
Right. And there is good data. There's good information out there. You just got to know where to look. I downloaded a book on Audible called Why We Get Fat by Gary Tobbs.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not a doctor, but he is a master researcher. Like, he knows how to sift through research.
Mm-hmm.
And he had
fun.
And he had a book which I wouldn't even download because I think it was 24 hours, Audible-wise. And I think as far as an actual book, it's like 400 pages or something like that. But it was about...
That's Harry Potter.
Yeah, I think it was Good Calories, Bad Calories, that one. And then the kind of the more, you know, abridged version, more summarized it and better, easier to digest version is Why We Get Fat. So I recommend that to really kind of learn. It kind of debunks the whole calorie in, calorie out theory.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm a firm believer that, you know,
it's one of the easier ways to track as far as like a base.
Yes, but it doesn't always work.
There's a lot of other pieces.
You know,
pieces.
Like I said, I don't think if you think you're eating less calories and you're going to lose weight in perpetuity, it's not exactly true.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like I said, we could go talk about books and everything on.
Yes.
But, you know, like I said, we'll save it for a new podcast or another ETT Wrap show. I want to thank my lovely fiance, soon to be wife, Shannon, for joining me today.
Yes.
And I enjoyed it so much that we might have you back on again. So if Tyler happens to get sick once again.
So I should bump off Tyler.
If you need to knock off Tyler, it's good. But I'm glad you enjoyed your time. I enjoyed you being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, once again, please tweet at Shannon, @ShannonPalmer on Twitter. And she has her own little, blog, website, A Dash of Sparkle.
Yep, right? adashofsparkle.com. Mm-hmm. It's just a lifestyle blog, so Nick is frequently featured in that blog and all the different things that we get up to. It's got recipes. It's got all kinds of random stuff.
Yeah, it's very all over the place, but everything's good.
It's all based off of just kind of the little bits of things, little bits of life that can add a little dash of sparkle. You know, just that little something that can make a day or, you know, a new adventure or something like that.
And tons of great pictures, too, and even product reviews, too.
Yes.
So that's a lot of good stuff on there.
Thank you.
Hers, A Dash of Sparkle, us, Elemental Training Tampa, and @ETT, guys, you'll all hear it at the outro. Please get a hold of us, comment, guys, leave us some questions or any possible podcast topics for us to discuss in a future ETT Wrap show. All right, that's it for us, guys. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
If you want to learn more about Elemental Training Tampa, Check us out on Facebook or go to our website, elementaltampa.com. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter under the handle ETTampa. Please rate and review the podcast. Your feedback will help us get better. Thanks.